Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We can say this with conviction today. Happy Football Friday to all of you. Practice begins today. There are a lot of skeptics that didn't think the NFL would make it this far with their plan. They've made it to practice. We'll see if they can get to week one of the season. But so far, so good.
And yeah, are you saying that my ceremonious victory marches around the studio in the city of Houston are perhaps a little bit premature?
Well, no, not if your goal was to get to the first practice. Then today is a day to celebrate. Today is a day to rejoice. Today there are going to be players in pads over at NRG Stadium, and we are here to cover all of it for you, including Bill O'Brien at 8 o'clock today with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans Training Camp Live, including J.J. Watt on at 2 o'clock sharp with Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley, and Seth, me at practice with updates on Twitter and on the shows throughout the day. I'm going to be on right after practice is over with John and Landry and at 5:15 with the afternoon guys. Today is a good day.
Yeah, you're one of 10 select individuals allowed into the quarantine area there.
Quite exclusive.
Quarantine. Yeah. No, I guess I shouldn't say quarantine area. But I guess this is also the day where around the NFL we're going to start seeing what exactly happens when perhaps one player slips through the cracks and has the COVID, and then he's out there forcefully exhaling into the faces of a whole lot of other guys. We just don't know what it's going to look like with actual NFL football practice.
Literally, the Texans and or the Chiefs will be the first set of COVID tests to come back after a padded practice because they're three days ahead of everybody else. As it's been pointed out several times, the Texans and the Chiefs, because they open up on Thursday the 10th, they're starting in on their stuff 3 days ahead of the rest of the NFL. So all eyes are going to be on the bioreference labs for both the Chiefs and the Texans the next 2 days.
And it's interesting. I mean, if you did a whole lot of testing at high school football teams, you'd be able to figure out exactly what it is. But the fact of the matter is most high schools don't have the resources to do thorough testing. Yeah. So they're screening and whatnot. And a lot of the kids just are – they're out there passing the COVID around, but they don't show any symptoms. So we just don't know. So this will be for our first real good hardcore data.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I was over there yesterday. I got my second COVID test yesterday. I haven't heard anything from anybody. So people know, no news is good news. And what I found out yesterday, Seth, is that I now get tested every day. Well, the 10 of us in the media get tested every day just like the players do. Like the same, we're on the same schedule as the players, including days where there are no practice. I have to drive over to NRG Stadium and get COVID tested. Like I just like at 10:30 in the morning, go over there, get COVID tested, and go home. Not stick around, but there's no practice. But and if you miss a day, you are not allowed back in the facility. Like you're not allowed back in the bubble or in the practice field until you get two negative tests back to back. So if I miss a day, that's 2 days that I'm basically quarantined from being allowed, but I'll be there every day.
This is like when if you miss an off-season drug test, you basically get treated like
it's
positive.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Well,
they're not drug testing me, are they?
Well, no, with the steroids, that's a stressful one. I always used to be stressed out about this. If you go on vacation in the off-season in the NFL, you have to let them know where you're going, because if your name comes up for random testing, they will track you down. And if they can't track you down, they treat it like a positive PED test.
Wow.
So, yeah, you could be off in Timbuktu, and all of a sudden you got to figure out a way to logistically to figure out how to meet the tester somewhere because your name came
up.
Did
that ever happen to you where you were on vacation somewhere and you had to go find an NFL testing facility to go meet
them? No. Whenever it happened to me in the offseason, I was always just at my home. So and then it's nice, even if you're, or, you know, I still had a place in Jacksonville, too. So even if I was in Jacksonville, They just come to your house.
Okay.
That's nice. You get the you get to have a retired DEA agent look at your penis while you urinate in the comfort of your own home.
That sounds
the way you've always dreamed.
Yeah, that's every kid's dream. Sounds like a fantasy,
doesn't it?
That's every kid's dream. It's nice to have
my own little lemon party here.
And at least it's at your own house, so you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, you get the home field advantage. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that begins today. Seth, I was over there yesterday. I was over there yesterday, and our friend Omar Maljoub, who's part of the Texans media staff, media relations staff, does a great job. You and I tried to, and may or may not be continuing, to try to steal him away to do good work for us over here because he's so good at his job. You and I have talked about kidnapping him and hiring him because he's so good at his job. He met us in the parking lot yesterday to walk over to the testing facility, and he handed me a gigantic picture of you grappling with some big fatty from the Minnesota Vikings. And at the bottom of the picture, there was a little engraved plate that said 2004 Ed Block Courage Award winner Seth Payne. And apparently they are taking the pictures down of all the Ed Block Courage Award winners.
Very Stalin-esque move. They're trying to erase the history of everything that came before.
At first I'm like, this is a little over the top by O'Brien to erase all of the previous Courage in franchise history. And he said, no. They're actually much to the contrary. They are painting a mural of all the Ed Block Courage Award winners. So he gave me that picture, and I said, thank you. I will hang this Omar, this is really nice of you to give to me. I'm going to hang this proudly in my home like a deer's head over my fireplace. And he said, no, I'm giving it to you to give to Seth.
You can have that picture if you'd like it.
It was a little weird when Amy hung it on the ceiling over our bed. I'm not going to lie.
I got in an argument with Brandy this weekend about all my game balls. She's trying to, like, she found I'd had them stashed away in storage, and she happened upon them. So now she wants to, you know, polish them all up and put them somewhere. And I was like,
that's nice.
This is so stupid. There's just more stuff to clean. I don't need all this clutter,
Seth,
and everything.
That's a nice move.
I mean, it's nice. I'm glad that she likes
proud
it
of you.
But I could care less. She's
very, very proud of you. So.
Let me ask you this, though. So now that you're being tested every day, are you being extra careful about what you do out in society so that you don't, you know, lose your privileges?
Yeah,
a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to, full disclosure, I'm not going to just go home and sit in my house here. I am not to the extent the players are and should be. I mean, I don't have millions of dollars on the line for this whole thing. Maybe if I did. We're not frequenting out as much as we were before. I'm playing it a little more careful.
You know what we should do is we should create a Karen situation for you where you're in practice and you start flipping out about how stupid all these rules are. You just start yelling at your buddy Omar there. Like, you're all sheep, Omar. You're all stupid. This is fake, Omar.
I got my mask on while I'm by myself right over here. Okay. Mask up.
Start coughing in his face.
You know what else I found out?
That's the way you get notoriety these
days,
Sean.
Spit on the media relations staff during the pandemic. I found out that the Kinexon thing isn't actually the vest. It's a watch.
Right,
it's a watch, and it's going to track all... I thought it was a vest.
I asked you yesterday. The catapult is the vest.
Yeah.
I was second-guessing everything I knew about all that stuff. The Kinexon is that awkward-looking watch that you wear.
It's a hideous watch, yeah.
That lets you know... I know. It looks like it would have been high tech in 1984.
You got a
Commodore 64 on your wrist.
You got a coaster on your wrist. It's like a huge white square. It's ridiculous looking, but it's cool. The technology's pretty cool.
But that's the thing that lets you know if you've been within 6 feet of anybody else for more than 10 minutes and all that stuff. It's really
flashes and stuff.
And it also, if you were to test positive, they'd be able to go back and look and see, okay, who has Sean been close to for any amount of time? Let's go be sure we test them also.
All the data, not just for the players and coaches, but for us as media, all gets uploaded to the NFL at the end of the day. So the NFL, I'm just picturing this big room full of people with lab coats that are looking at a clipboard of, McLean, check. Berman, check.
A huge picture of you pops up on the screen as they're doing it. It's like a NASA a control room style setting. Yeah.
Seth, that's my biggest nightmare is the Texans have been maybe the model team in the NFL. And this goes back to your question. This is probably what made me more cautious is reading all the articles about how awesome the Texans have been doing with the coronavirus. Like, no positive, literally no positive tests since guys got in the building over there. Like, literally zero for anybody. Anybody who's taken a test over there, it's been negative. I'm like, God, the last thing I need is to be the first negative test in the whole. And I know I'm not even an employee of the team. You know what I mean? But did I say positive? Not first negative. First positive. Negative in a different way, but first I don't want to be the first positive coronavirus test. So that's my worst nightmare is that. But I've been careful.
That guy. That's the fear of letting the other guy down, you know. Don't let your buddies down.
Yeah, so that's my mentality now. All right, so we are off and running. It is truly a football Friday, and we have you covered not just today, but throughout training camp, which is happening right now over at NRG Stadium. Texans training camp, we got you covered here on Sports Radio 610. Not great news for the Rockets yesterday, but it does add a little spice to the first round of the playoffs. Seth and I will dig into that next. I think Ocho sums it up best here, Seth. It's a beautiful morning. NFL camps are upon us. NBA playoffs loom. And Cody Bellinger is batting 165. God is good.
Gosh. Cody Bellinger again. The old, just always remember Rafael Palmeiro. Sometimes the people who object most vociferously are covering something up. So I don't know. Now that Major League Baseball has really, really super cracked down on things.
Yep.
Cody Bellinger, I don't know. If Jose Altuve not hitting well is because he doesn't get to wear his buzzer now, according to so many people, then I don't know. Cody Bellinger must not be hitting well
for a reason. That's right. God only knows what technology he had on him. All right. So we've got you covered on the NFL, and we will continue to mix in some Texans talk throughout the morning here on Sports Radio 610. The NBA's last day of the regular season is today, and it's largely meaningless because last night the Portland Trailblazers played their way into a play-in with the Memphis Grizzlies. So now everything is slotted. Everything's ready to go other than who will the Lakers play in the first round of the playoffs. They will play the winner of a play-in situation, we'll call it, with Portland and Memphis. If Portland wins one game against Memphis, they're in. If Memphis wins two games against Portland, they're in. That's kind of fun. It was cool watching Damian Lillard do his thing last night. Seth, it was cool watching him do that, but there was a bit of a pall cast over watching NBA basketball last night because the Rockets, as we feared yesterday, looks like they will not be going into the playoffs at full strength. Russell Westbrook, not a smokescreen, out for the start of the playoffs with a quad strain. And Mike D'Antoni, it sounds like D'Antoni said, we'll see how it responds and everything. We all hope. We'll just see next week. I don't know right now. Seth, if I had to guess, it's sounding like he's going to miss some time in the playoffs.
Right, and yesterday when you asked what my concern level was on a scale of 1 to 10, I said a 5. I thought about it after the show, and it was the fact that he had gotten an MRI at all that should have had me more concerned. I think sometimes if a player can tell when he's just a little strained or a little tight or something. If you're going to get an MRI, even though they're pretty liberal with the MRIs, that's reason for concern. So now I might have flipped all the way over to 9 or 10 on the concern meter. Why did he get an MRI? I know that he's trying to come back, but what if he's really going to make a hero's effort to come back because it's such a bad strain or tear or what have you? It won't matter if they don't just take care of business and beat Oklahoma City with or without Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, they're still heavily favored in this series. No mistake, like Oklahoma City is an underdog to the extent that, boy, if I wasn't rooting for the Rockets already, I might think of putting some money down. They're like a 3-1 underdog in this series. I think even with Russell Westbrook, Oklahoma City has given the Rockets problems and can give them problems. Now, I don't know that they played the Rockets once they went super small. I don't know if they played the Rockets post-Covington deal or not. Well, the Covington deal went down, and then they were in quarantine almost shortly right after that. But I don't know if they played them. I can't remember if they played them or not after they went with the small ball lineup. Nevertheless, either way, in a way, Seth, that makes the series kind of fun. Look, I want Westbrook back in this series because I want to see Russ go against his old team. But let's face it, the big storyline that was driving that trade of Chris Paul getting shipped out of here, every bit as much as the Thunder losing Paul George triggering the need to trade Russell Westbrook in Russ's mind, the flip side of that is the Rockets' end of that trade was done entirely because the string just ran out between James Harden and Chris Paul. Like, James just didn't want to play with Chris Paul anymore. They didn't like each other. There were plenty of reports that from reputable sources. So at least for a little bit, maybe a game, maybe two games, who knows how long this quad takes to heal for Westbrook, we're going to get James Harden and Chris Paul, and that's it as far as alpha dogs on the court for both of these teams. like their all-star against our all-star, and these are two guys who reportedly did not like each other this time last year.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun, actually. I'd rather have Russ. I'd rather win the series, but like this will actually be fun watching these two guys go at it with each other.
Last time the Rockets played the Thunder, which was January 20th, Capella played in that game.
Okay.
So the Capella trade was early.
It was in February.
Right? So I think that it's hard to tell, even from the bubble, even though there were some things that looked good. The Rockets were obviously inconsistent at times, but they've played good defense. They're going to get killed on rebounds. We all know that. I think the biggest factor here is as long as Eric Gordon's ankle is okay, as long as Austin Rivers can do some of what he's been doing in the absence of Russell Westbrook and or James Harden, then, yeah, they're a better basketball team. They have more good basketball players on the court than the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
And that's the basic simple math that tends to favor you in a playoff series. But having said all of that, it's so hard and frustrating sometimes to watch James Harden get double teamed at midcourt and realize, okay, it's all you guys. It's you guys versus four, and can you handle it, and can you step up to the task, and can Mike D'Antoni do everything they need to do? That's enough of a wild card to put a knot in my stomach, especially because it would be such a sweet story, and sometimes the basketball gods favor the sweet story more than the actual math.
Yeah, well, and what happens in this series, you know, if Russ is out the first couple games, what happens if it's 1-1? God forbid, what if they fall behind 2-0 in this series? Seth, in some ways, this is the worst opponent the Rockets could have handpicked, because if it does go sideways, then the Westbrook trade looks like a disaster. If you get knocked off by Chris Paul, then the Westbrook trade looks, you look and you go, what were we doing? You know what I mean?
It looks like a disaster this year. I think there's still time to play out. And I would say that I'm trying to look at this as objectively as possible. You don't grade a trade based on what happens the first year afterwards. Now, if Russell Westbrook was banged up for the rest of his career and the Rockets never made it back to the playoffs or something, then by all means, yes, that would be a horrible trade. But I don't trust that Chris Paul. I think if you look at the next 5 years, I think Russell Westbrook is going to have more really good playoff performances than Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And that's how I'll judge the trade.
Yep.
As the Rockets sit there with no first round picks.
I'm okay with that.
They have them. They got to swap some of them with the Thunder.
And in the NBA, you can find first round picks. Like, teams throw them around like they're nickels. It's a weird thing.
We say that, but also recognize that a total of four first round picks. You know, people say like, oh, look, who was the last person the Rockets used the first round pick on? Well, I mean, Harden and Westbrook. Are those there are four first round picks
I would say Capella was the 25th pick in the draft. They used a first round pick on Capella that they turned into a good center for a little while, and then they turned into Robert Covington. Have you seen the start times for the Rocket game, Seth? You know my fetish for weekday daytime sports.
Yeah, I know. This is where we got to remember that most of our listeners don't have the flexibility to be able to watch basketball in the early afternoon. They have to go to work.
I think you underestimate our listeners' ability to watch things on a phone, my friend. All right? 5:30 on Tuesday, game one.
Oh, okay.
2:30 on Thursday, game two.
Oh, yeah.
5 o'clock Saturday, game three, and 3 o'clock on Monday, game four.
So we're going to be able to watch. I'm guessing that matches up pretty well with even being able to watch Astros games.
Yes.
Every day, every one of those days.
That?
So that's pretty cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's
going to
be nice. I love the days where I know that workplace productivity is going to plummet in Houston.
Yeah.
Where you've got a baseball game. Like, every one of these baseball games feels almost like a playoff game now.
Yeah.
Because you're so close down to the wire. Now, I'm savoring and relishing a little bit the fact that the Astros are fighting for their lives, because we haven't had that feeling in a while, right?
Not in mid-August.
Like, you're backed up against the wall,
and
you're fighting for your life, and I kind of like it. And you've got playoff basketball. And then, beggars can't be choosers. It'd be nice if we had a preseason game or something to dice up a little bit in the NFL. But screw it. I got two sports playing very meaningful games in August.
That's right. Two sports, and we got practice with the Texans, and I've got you covered on that, so it's all good. Up next, I listened to the podcast, Seth, with Joe Kelly. that he did with his teammate, Ross Stripling. It's the Big Swing podcast. I'm going to have a take that I think is going to be very unpopular in Houston about that. And Seth also did some scouting on the newest Texan that we will get to as well. That's next on a Friday. We got you covered here, Texans training camp on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so Joe Kelly did a podcast with one of his teammates, Ross Stripling. It's called the Big Swing Podcast. And as you can imagine, he just took a flamethrower to the Astros. He figuratively took aim at their skull and in some respects missed it by a foot like he did with Alex Bregman. But there are some interesting things that that Joe Kelly had to say in here. Seth, I've got some of the highlights cobbled out here. So let's go through these and see how Joe Kelly, who I feel like is he public enemy number one right now for Astro fans? Is he the most hated opposing player, the most hated non-Astro in the moment? If Astro fans were to power rank them on a weekly basis, he's certainly up there on the charts right now.
Where would you put him compared to Bellinger, I suppose?
Or Laureano right now. You know?
Right.
You know?
Well, Laureano, I don't know. The whole Laureano thing was so weird. I can see Laureano's side of everything and all of that. And he was, you know, he'd been hit three times that week.
Yeah, that's true.
He was getting frustrated at some point. Yeah. But Laureano's was more of a heat of the moment thing. Joe Kelly being kind of propped up as the hero that Dodgers fans have been waiting for, it annoys me more than anything,
right,
especially as he's not even actually taking, as you'll hear right now, he's accusing the Astros of not owning their mistakes and whatnot. Well, at the same time, he seemingly is not owning the fact that he threw at Correa and Bregman.
Right.
And yet he's accepting all this praise and credit. It's really weird.
Yeah,
it's really weird.
I have a conclusion that I come to after listening to all of this, but let's dig into it. We've got a few of the cuts from this, so let's first dig into Joe Kelly talking about his suspension and Dusty Baker.
Apparently you can't walk a guy, and apparently you can't say bad words or make funny faces at an opposing team because that will cost you 8-2. But this guy walks over to our dugout and then spits while I follow all the rules, and then I get 8 games. Oh, but then they want to say, well, Joe, your words, like that's unsportsmanlike. Oh, really? Because with no fans, I can hear everything. They have a manager on their side, verbatim, yelling at me, saying, get your little skinny ass on the mound. My cuss words get 8 games, and his cuss words get 0. Welcome to planet Earth. And then he's body shaming me. He's body shaming me. He's a bully. He's calling me skinny. Imagine if he's calling me fat. Hey, I take offense to that. That hurts my feelings. Dusty, that hurts my feelings. You're calling me skinny. That's not nice. Don't do that. That's not very Major League Baseball-like of you to do that.
Okay, that last part was funny. I'm not going to lie. The body-shaming part, that was
funny. At first I thought he was serious, and I was disgusted. And then I realized, oh, okay, all right, that's all right.
I actually started to like him a little bit with that line at the end. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think he was joking about acting like he was suspended for the words that he said and not throwing at the heads of two players.
He starts off by saying, what, you can't walk a guy, which tells me that what he's saying there is that he wasn't intentionally throwing at Bregman. Like, it was ball 4 that sailed over Bregman's head. He's like, what, you can't walk a guy? Well, no, you can't walk a guy when the fourth ball is clearly aimed at the guy. It's a fastball at the guy's skull. No, you can't.
When they have reason to believe that you're trying to hit them intentionally, and
right,
you've already been suspended once in your career before for hitting a batter, that's where I just, he's accusing. You'll hear. Let's just listen to him. That part, I was incredulous at that.
Yeah,
like he's sitting there, in that part, apparently with a straight face, saying that he was being suspended for his words and not his actions.
Yeah.
Astounding.
And Dusty, I mean, Dusty did curse at him. The mics picked it up.
Like, well,
He didn't say your skinny little eye. Like, he added some colorful words. Real quick, before we get to the next cut, who spit at them? He talks about a player who spit. Did Correa spit at them? Is that what he's accusing? I mean, Correa is the one who walked over first.
Yeah.
I don't know who that was. That's the first accusation I've heard of a spit. And keep in mind, some people go, well, they spit in the direction. Spitting's illegal now in baseball because of the coronavirus, so keep that
point in
mind. Here's Joe Kelly on the power that he apparently thinks he wields.
I followed every single rule. I didn't make those guys come out. If my words are that powerful, I can convince. I'm pretty much a magician. I'm brainwashing these guys. I have telekinetic powers, apparently, according to whoever's running Major League Baseball, that my words are that powerful that I'm making these people, against their own will, come towards me. After I'm done playing baseball, you guys could look out for me. I might run for president, and I guess when I speak, either put in eardrums, you don't want to hear it, because I'll convince you to do whatever the heck I say.
Joe Kelly for president.
Yeah. But again, he's half tongue in cheek there, but I think he's genuinely holding to this premise that he was suspended for his words
for cursing.
So again, is he not taking credit for trying to exact vengeance on these guys? In
right.
which case, the Dodgers, this is what I've maintained all along, which is the Dodgers fans can't be assured that Joe Kelly was even intending to throw at those guys because he's so damn wild.
That's right.
Like they might as well build a statue of Joe Kelly's dad for forgetting to wear a condom when Joe Kelly was conceived. If we're going to just start rewarding mistakes for things that led to those two guys getting hit or thrown at, then by all means, all of Joe, like any mistake made by any of Joe Kelly's ancestors should also be rewarded.
Okay, so we're doing Zapruder analysis of Joe Kelly's appearance on the Big Swing podcast with his teammate Ross Stripling. Here is Joe Kelly on the notion that, well, everybody was cheating.
Like me, if I was a snitch or bad, I'd be like, dude, I panicked. I didn't know what to say. Hey, my bad, bro. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'll go do an interview and da-da-da. Like, no. So until that happens, I don't know if it has because I don't talk to those guys and I don't want to talk to those guys because they're not respectable men to me. What Correa said to Belly, Belly had all the facts. You don't tell my teammate to shut the f*** up. And to take it a step further with supposedly the Yankees and the Red Sox cheating, let's just put it straight. Like, it's a joke. What happened, and it's public, what you do before and after a game of trying to give yourself an edge on the opposing pitcher is fair game. What you're doing is giving instant feedback, live signs during a game is not fair game. So for all the people out there saying, oh, the Red Sox, the Yankees, or even the Dodgers got mentioned, this boat, every team could be mentioned on that aspect. So for them saying like, oh, you're on a cheating team too, it ain't about that. It's about being a respectable human being and not lying to save your own ass.
Okay, I don't know. He seems to be another guy who's swept up in the fact that the Astros got immunity in this.
Yeah.
And that they actually use their immunity in this.
Well, and this was, and he didn't even address that one in this clip. That's the one where when he calls them snitches and whatnot. He's making the distinction between the way that the Red Sox and the Yankees cheated versus the way that the Astros cheated. This is just a little bit of moral relativism,
right, is
what he's pulling here. But then also, like, let's recall Bellinger was way off. Bellinger did not have all the facts. And listen, Joe Kelly, Correa can say whatever the hell he wants to your teammate. I love how Joe Kelly's like taking ownership of like, hey, you don't talk to my teammate that way, buddy.
Right.
Like, come on, yeah. Joe Kelly. I've heard him a couple times now act like he's the hard ass and like he's the tough guy. There isn't a person on this green earth that gives a damn about Joe Kelly. Like if Joe Kelly was in your face talking smack about how he's going to kick your ass, my grandma wouldn't be worried about it. That skinny little punk.
Kelly, not your grandma. You didn't just call your grandma a skinny little
both.
Punk.
She's quite svelte as well. Okay. She takes care of herself.
Just checking. Yeah. Let's just do a quick truth check on Cody Bellinger. Let's do a flashback here. This is one of those things, Seth, where if this were a 30 for 30, we would do a cut-in with, you know, kind of some grainy footage of Cody Bellinger back in February at spring training. Kelly is saying that Cody Bellinger did have all the facts and that Correa shouldn't tell him to shut the bleep up. Here is a quick snippet of Cody Bellinger. Let's see if we can count the number of things that Cody Bellinger gets wrong in these 30 seconds.
You know, I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us.
All right, so I count four things in 30 seconds. A highly efficient fountain of misinformation being spewed by Cody Bellinger. He, again, gets up in his feelings about immunity, which was granted back in September of 2017 to everybody when Major League Baseball announced the sign-stealing policy would be the punishment would be directed at management, not the players. He said they cheated for 3 years. They did not. He said Altuve stole an MVP. He did not. He said they stole a ring from us. Dude, you struck out like 18 times in the World Series. If you're going to stick up for your loss in the World Series, find somebody who hit higher than like .067 in the World Series.
Well, and the other part of it too is, where if Cody Bellinger had all the facts, he asked a very stupid question for somebody that had all the facts when he said, hey, why would they have stopped after 2017? It doesn't make any sense. Well, if you'd read the damn report, Cody Bellinger, with all the facts, as Joe Kelly claims you have, The Astros' own internal documents in 2017 said, hey, this isn't working anymore.
Yeah.
And like the investigation very clearly showed that it just fizzled out because it flat out wasn't working. So that's why. You asked a question that had already been answered, and yet somehow used that as the basis for why the Astros were cheating in 2018 and 2019. Yeah. Correa was right to call out Bellinger. Yeah. Correa was right to point out what Bellinger had wrong. And then also we know now, at the time, Bellinger wouldn't have had all this evidence that shows that, A, Altuve was not participating in the scheme at all. Which, okay, does he benefit with our RBIs and everything and run support, whatever? Yeah, you could argue that, whatever. But as far as Altuve's own actions, that the weak-ass apology, again, Sean, I'm convinced that 97% of baseball in the media thinks that Altuve and Bregman's statements at the podium that day were the only things that the players have ever said about it.
Yeah.
The players all went on to give extensive interviews just an hour later in the clubhouse, and the media chose to ignore almost all of those. And that's the part where, look, yeah, Bellinger was flat out completely wrong on a lot of stuff. But where Bellinger and Joe Kelly are right now, they're in a situation where they're going to get attaboys for anything they say that tears down the Astros no matter what. So they're held to zero standards. So Joe Kelly can sit here. Joe Kelly can sit here and accuse the Astros of not owning their mistakes. Well, at the same time, acting like he was suspended for his words and not for throwing at two batters.
Yeah.
While still getting credit for throwing at the bat. Oh, it's astounding.
It's good to be Joe Kelly. Yeah, yeah. Last one from Joe Kelly. He says that he actually feels for Jim Crane.
I mean, shoot, if I was Jim Crane, I'd probably be mad. Like, these guys aren't going to perform at that level, most likely, as a unit, as a team. And now you paid all that money to what you think you got. It was a placebo. It was fake. It was faux. It was not authentic. So when you see something like that, and then, like I said, I played for somebody who had their name tarnished, that's the only reason why I'm as mad. So if I was a twin and I never played for Alex Cora, I didn't know Alex, I would be mad at the fact that they cheated, and that's the only thing I would know. But my passion comes from a different spot, and I love AC.
Okay, I love his personal feelings. Getting like Alex Cora didn't do anything wrong. Everybody else did stuff. I like Al. Okay.
No, yeah, he's very much trying to paint this image of that somehow the players all got together and scapegoated Alex Cora.
Right.
He also is trying to paint an image that somehow all the players got together and decided to tell the whole truth about 2017. But not 2018 or 2019.
Right.
You know, like, they also got together and, okay, he wants to selectively say that, well, the investigation showed that the Red Sox didn't do anything all that bad. So the investigation is to be believed, but it's at the same time also, don't believe the investigation when it comes to the Astros not cheating.
Right, they did it for 3 years.
2019,
yeah.
Just selectively believe what you want to about the investigation.
I'm guessing Crane is cool with Alex Bregman at $16 million a year for the next 5 years. I'm guessing Jim Crane is a fan of that contract. I'm guessing Jim Crane is still, even though he struggled early in the season, a big fan of Jose Altuve. Jim Crane wants to pay George Springer. If Carlos Correa continues playing like this, Jim Crane is going to want to pay Carlos Correa. And if he doesn't, somebody will. So somebody's going to fall in love with all these players. And go, wow, I really feel for Jim Crane having to pay these guys who cheated for the last 3 years.
Plus, and I want to make one thing clear, too. And this is another spot where Joe Kelly is completely out of line. And a total hypocrite, and shows that he's speaking out of his ass, where he said, like, hey, maybe, you know, the Astros players, if they spoke up and cleared things up, I might respect them. But I don't know if they've done that because I don't listen to anything they say. So, all right, so apparently you don't like them because of something you don't know has actually happened or not. The Astros players have spoken. I'll quote Alex Cora himself. Quote, but the Astros players have spoken up and refuted any allegations that I was solely responsible. Unquote. So, okay, look, Joe Kelly, I know you're not speaking to the Astros players. How about speaking to Alex Cora himself, who is saying that the players have stood up and defended him somewhat and said that he's being unfairly scapegoated? And, you know, that's one of the things his buddy Carlos Correa was saying, that Cora and Carlos Beltran had been unfairly painted in all of this. So he's completely talking out of his ass, and yet everybody will lap this up like it's the word of God.
Okay, Seth, quick, possibly unpopular take. Joe Kelly, good for baseball. He is good for baseball. Yeah. He's bringing a little bit of spice to the mix for a sport that needs a little spiciness. He reminds me of McCullers a little bit. Not that Lance is out there spewing falsehoods or anything, but just their tone, their kind of feistiness and stubbornness.
Yeah, I feel like Lance tries to tell the truth when he speaks.
So. I do too. No, I that's why I
like
made
Joe
it clear.
Joe Kelly is blatantly lying.
Yeah,
here,
no, I just meant the tone and the feistiness and the outspokenness.
I would say everything except the actual telling the truth about things part. Right. I would say there's a lot of similarities there.
Right.
But I guess it's kind of like you know how they found that personality traits of firefighters and criminals, they share a lot in common, except that firefighters like use all that energy and aggression and all that stuff for good.
Yeah.
Whereas criminals, like that one little thing that flips in them is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to use all of this zest for life and everything for bad purposes.
No, the Venn diagram of venture capitalists and drug kingpins overlaps quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's just the tolerance for unlawfulness or the things that sit on the margins. That's all.
So, like, Lance at some point decided in his life, I'm going to use all this energy and fire for good.
For
whereas
truth.
Joe Kelly decided to use it on everything except speaking the truth controlling his fastball.
You did some PJ Hall film watching yesterday.
I did.
How was that?
Were you able
to keep your clothes on as you were watching
PJ
Hall?
Yeah, so PJ Hall's the defensive lineman. Yeah, the defensive tackle that the Texans signed. The Raiders had him for a couple years. They drafted him in the second round. They tried to trade him to the Minnesota Vikings this offseason, but he failed the physical. So the Texans bring him in. And I hadn't watched PJ Hall closely since he played for Sam Houston, and he was here for the Battle of the Piney Woods. And I really liked him as a college player. I think that there are a couple things that you should watch for at training camp when you watch PJ Hall, Sean. He's got a certain quick twitch to him that the Texans haven't had a whole lot of on their defensive line outside of J.J. Watt that I'm really intrigued by. The thing is, he hasn't really translated it into a lot of production on the field. He's very, very powerful. He's only 6'1.5" tall, which is a weakness in some respects, but it also gives him a whole lot of natural leverage. He gets up underneath the pads of offensive linemen. He had some really good snaps in the run game versus Nick Martin. Actually, he really kind of dish-ragged Nick Martin a couple times. He had some really good plays. But he just hasn't, for a guy that ran a sub-4.8 40 on his pro day and who has a lot of pop and explosion, he hasn't turned that into a repertoire of pass rush moves. He doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of lateral agility. I think that with a few technique tweaks and maybe with changing his body composition a little bit, he could end up being a much more productive player.
Yeah, you played the same position as him, so that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, we know what the traits are with him, and they were good enough to get him drafted in the second round. With the body of work that he's had and now with the film that you've watched, is this a piece of clay? Is this a lump of clay that can be molded into something through some developmental type of things?
Yeah, I definitely think there is. And I honestly think one of the biggest things, and I'm not saying this is a criticism at all, I think his ideal body weight might be a little bit lower than what he's been playing at. Sometimes guys get into the league and they think, well, I got to weigh 300 pounds. You know, you're a defensive tackle in the NFL, you got to weigh 300 pounds. I don't know if that's his game. I think this is a guy that if he weighed 290 or 295, could be a lot closer to being an Aaron Donald. You know, let's be clear. He's not Aaron
you
Donald.
You know that somebody is going to stand at the water cooler today, and they're going to say, I was listening to Payne and Pendergast, and Seth said that the Texans may have found the next Aaron Donald by signing PJ Hall off the waiver wire.
I brought up Aaron Donald just because, you know, John, when I was talking about this yesterday with you about how there are a lot of really good 6'1", 6 foot tall defensive tackles,
right.
And John Harris brought up a few, he texted me a few names, and one of them is Aaron Donald. I do think, though, that, like, PJ Hall is athletic enough to get away with being a lighter defensive tackle, and yet I watch him in Oakland, and it looks like they were trying to, either they or he was trying to turn him into this two-gapping, run-stuffing type. I don't think he needs to be that guy. I think there's untapped potential in him, and I think that he could be a much more dynamic, explosive player if he maybe plays at a different body weight. And again, I'm not saying he's fat. He's not fat by defensive tackle standards, but he's got really thick legs and a thick upper body, and he's got a lot of weight packed on, and it keeps him from moving you know, with the fluidity that you'd like to see out of a guy like a Aaron Donald or a John Randall or one of those guys.
Okay, here is the question then, Seth. And this is not to put you in a position where you're going to say he's the next what I'm about to say.
Yeah. Oh, wait, and I forgot, by the way, and I forgot to make the connection there with Aaron Donald. Is Aaron Donald's short. He's 6'1", whatever he is.
Yep, and he's really, really good at football. So we know the Texans defensively that there's – you know, not much has come into the building yet that you can say cures a lot. It's a lot of rookies, right? The first three draft picks they used were all on rookies in the defensive line, on the edge with Grenard, and then John Reed at cornerback. So we don't know what they are yet. They're rookies. Eric Murray, we don't know what he is yet. He right now is a guy that everybody's scratching their head over. He's getting $6 million a year, and he's probably going to start at safety for this team. That's a face that I'll be anxious to go watch play today at practice. With respect to P.J. Hall, the other thing with the Texans that gets brought up a lot this year is that, yeah, they brought in a bunch of question marks, and the one piece that they lost was a guy who became the highest paid interior defensive lineman in football in D.J. Reader. I'm not asking you if P.J. Hall is going to be the next D.J. Reader, but does his skill set and do his physical traits map more closely with D.J. Reader than they do some of the other heavy set guys that they already have on the defensive line?
No. And I would say that because it's like D.J. Reader is still a big 3-4 defensive lineman, nose tackle type, you know, and he can play defensive end.
He can get upfield a little bit.
Yeah, but not. But he's not. He's still not an explosive athlete. He's a really good. He's the best version of that 3-4 defensive lineman.
Right.
That 330. D.J. Reader's 340 pounds. You know, where
wow,
I'm sitting here
really?
Saying P.J. Hall should weigh, I think he might play best weighing like 295.
Okay.
So I think he's a lot closer to Ross Blacklock than he is to D.J. Reader.
And you're saying Reader is more close to the Blacksons and the Duns of the world than he is to what you're talking about with Hall. Hall's even further down the prism of athleticism and explosiveness. I guess that's why he was a second-round pick. And DJ's a fifth-round pick.
Right. Because DJ's the best version of those guys, of Angelo Blackson
gotcha.
And Brandon Dunn and all those guys.
Gotcha.
But he is still, he's a run stuffer that can press the pocket. It felt, when I was watching the Oakland film, it felt like P.J. Hall is a guy who should be a dynamic pass rusher who is instead trying to be a run stuffer.
Yeah.
And I would tell him, have some faith in yourself, young man.
Yeah.
You're more than, it is actually, and honestly, there is a little something to that. Sometimes guys just need to believe and understand just how explosive they are. And sometimes guys get pigeonholed into believing like, well, I'm just a big, thick run stuffer. I don't think this kid needs to be that. I think he can be a much more explosive, dynamic
you
player.
You can be
that.
More.
Yeah.
Aim high.
You know what? Okay. As much as I have fun with Easterby and his whole kind of youth counselor, motivational speaker thing,
right.
This is a Jack Easterby guy. Like, I think that Jack Easterby could kind of fill this guy's head with good thoughts about just exactly what he can be in the NFL.
There's a reason you were a second-round pick, buddy.
Yeah.
There's a reason you were a second-round pick. Give him a big pat on the ass. D.J. Reader listed 6'3", 347.
Yeah.
I never thought he was that. He carried 347 pretty well.
He did, yeah. He was really, he didn't look like a big fatty or anything.
No.
By our defensive tackle.
Seth, I would be terrible at that circus thing where you got the guys who try to guess the weight of people on D.J. Reader. I would be giving away stuffed animals galore to D.J. Reader because I'd have been like, fella, you look like you're about 305. Nope. Nope, I'm a biscuit shy of 350.
How heavy is Joe Kelly?
Yeah, what's that?
How heavy is Joe Kelly?
86 pounds.
Yeah.
Thin shaming. All right. It is a football Friday, and it feels great to say it. We've got you covered for Texans training camp. I'll be out there at practice today, calling into In the Loop and Clint Sterner in the show in the afternoon at 5:15 with updates from practice. I'll be tweeting from out there. Bill O'Brien, 8 o'clock with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris today, so that you get the Texans head coach at 8 o'clock today. And you get J.J. Watt, 2 o'clock sharp, with the guys in the afternoon here on Sports Radio 610, Clint Sterner and the show. So it's a great, great first day of Texans practice here on Sports Radio 610. Not a great day for a Seahawks rookie who actually has local ties here to Houston. Yet another lesson, do not try to pop the bubble. We have it for you next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.